Hello, and welcome back to the Same Page Podcast. Today, we're going to be talking about something that is probably going to be more difficult for people to hear than the usual podcasts we go over. We're going to be talking about a term that I actually kind of, you know, made up and threw together myself, spiritually performative authoritarianism. We're going to touch a little bit on the separation of church and state, why that's important, the dangers of, the blending of religion and politics, who it protects. Does it protect politics? Does it protect religion? Does it protect you? What's the reasoning behind it all? And kind of go from there. So the phrase spiritually performative authoritarianism isn't a standard academic or philosophical term, but it can be understood by unpegging its parts. So I asked ChatGPT what it was. Like I said, it's a word that I kind of, threw together myself, or a term, I guess, I threw together myself to describe, to be honest, it was a way for me to kind of understand and put a word to some relatives and, just people that I know in life who claim to be super spiritual and claim to be, all about, turning the other cheek, so to speak. And, when it comes down to politics and just, the things that they stand behind, not just, in politics, but, in life in general, as of late, it doesn't seem to, mesh. They seem to be kind of not what they should be, I don't think that a lot of, what historical Jesus would agree with. Not even, the more recent blue-eyed Jesus that everybody seems to think is there. I don't see how the overlap can exist. And so that's what I've come to, to call people who, claim to be super religious and claim that that is their reasoning behind certain choices they make that are so opposite of what religion actually teaches. So ChatGPT is going to break down the term spirituality. Refers to a person or communal beliefs, practices centered around meaning, inner growth, and transcendence. Performative. Something is performative when it is done primarily to be seen or to signal virtue or enlightenment, rather than for genuine spiritual growth or conviction. Authoritarianism. Authoritarianism involves imposing control, demanding obedience, or suppressing dissent, often with moral or ideological justification. It's about enforcing conformity through authority, guilt, or fear. So those are each one, and then putting it all together. Spiritually performative authoritarianism describes a style of leadership or cultural behavior where someone or group claims spiritual or moral authority. I'm more awakened and enlightened than you. Think of like the person that wakes up one day and they're like, God spoke to me in a dream. We need to do this. We need to do that. And then instantly, because they claim that God spoke to them, or they're a prophet of God, or, God is working through them, it gives them, legitimacy. Perform spirituality publicly to build legitimacy status. So that's the performative side of things, like I just said. Using that spiritual image to control others. Silence disagreement or enforce purity standards. So examples of, someone that is a spiritually performative authoritarian. A guru or an influencer who insists their followers obey for their own spiritual good while publicly showcasing their inner peace or authenticity. A spiritual community or company that provides that preaches love, light, and mindfulness, but punishes criticism, pressures conformity, and ostracizes anyone who questions leadership. So I think that's something that a lot of people get from religion itself, where faith in and of itself is not to be questioned. It's something that you're supposed to go along with and just believe, despite the fact that you can't prove it. You're supposed to just believe it. You're supposed to follow it because of the love you have for it. So love is truth. Love is obedience. And if you're not just taking things at face value, you're no longer a good, loyal subject. You're outside of the group. You can be ostracized, just for asking the question. So in short, spiritually performative authoritarianism is using the appearance of spirituality to justify control, suppress autonomy, and demand moral obedience. It's often seen as toxic positivity, cult-like organizations, and wellness movements where image and obedience outweigh authenticity and freedom. I see those trends very often in American politics recently. Why do religious people often go against actual religious teachings and use the very same religion to justify it? That's a deeply perceptive observation, and you're not alone in noticing it. What you're describing is a long-standing, complex psychological and cultural and political pattern. Let's unpack why religious people or movements sometimes act against their own moral and spiritual teachings. Number one, religion is a source of group identity. For many, religion functions less as a personality, spiritual practice, and more as a social identity marker, who we are versus who they are. When that happens, loyalty to a group can take precedence over the teachings of the faith. Defending our way of life or our people can start to feel more sacred than actually following principles like humility, compassion, or justice. So the example of that would be, love thy neighbor can get reinterpreted as protect our neighbors from them. So instead of, turning the other cheek, which is the one that I always seem to come back to, with religion, people don't seem to turn the other cheek anymore. It's more like, we need to get revenge to protect somebody else. I think that the protector angle gets overplayed a lot as, I'm doing this for you, whether you like it or not. And next one, cognitive dissonance and rationalization. Cognitive dissonance is a big thing for humans just in normal everyday life. Humans have an instinct to protect their self-image. When the behavior clashes with their beliefs, they often reinterpret the belief to justify the behavior. So think, I'm being cruel, but for a righteous cause. I'm lying, but it's for God's greater truth. My enemies are evil, so normal morality doesn't apply. So I think that the, my enemies are evil sort of thing is something that we're seeing very often right now with, ICE. They're not from here. They don't look like me. They're rapists. They're coming and doing this. They're committing all the crime. They're taking your money. They're taking your jobs. They're taking this. They're taking that. It's all them versus us kind of thing. And it's more of that herd mentality. And it's really dangerous. And I think that what's happening, and I think unfortunately it's intentional, is to make people who don't look like you seem like they're not human at all. And I think that it's to create this we and this group, and it's to give you not necessarily a face, because it's not even a face, but it's to give you an outlet or something to aim for with your anger and your reason or your need to blame something for some situation that you're in or the country's in or the world is in. You find this one group and it's their fault. And I think that I think it's really dangerous, and I think that it's easy for people to, bandwagon together on political co-option of religion. Political actors often use religious language because it's emotionally powerful and socially legitimizing. Invoking religion can frame political goals as divine mandates rather than policy choices. This shift debate from is this effective to are you with or against God, effectively silencing dissent. Once faith becomes a political brand, leaders and followers may defend the brand, not the beliefs. I think that's a big one too. I think that a lot of people, they identify as one political group specifically because that is the political group of religion, and they don't dig any deeper than that, or they don't go issue by issue. They go, this group is religious. They don't go, what this group thinks about this. Is that the religious stance that we should take? Is that what, goes along with what I've been taught on Sundays at church, or, however you practice your religion? Is that what I've been taught by the, the scripture, the word of insert religious figure? I think it's too vague. I think it needs to be more specific. I think you need to go a case-by-case basis with your faith and not just, I'm going to follow this person because they're the faith person. Because I think that's dangerous. Authoritarian personality dynamics, authoritarian systems, religious or political, tend to attract and produce people who crave certainty and clear hierarchies, fear ambiguity, pluralism, or change, see obedience as virtue and dissent as a threat. When religion is filtered through the mindset, it becomes about control rather than conscience. Compassion and humility get framed as weakness. Judgment and purity become proof of strength. So it's literally saying the warning sign of exactly what I've heard in the news recently, that empathy is a sin. Empathy is going to be the downfall of us. And this is saying the exact opposite, that, you know, they're using it as a way to, you know, tell you that it's a weakness and it's a flaw, when, you know, your religion is more likely than not telling you the exact opposite of that. Performative piety. In modern media-driven societies, public displays of faith often gain social capital, votes, money, and credibility. So basically, there's a lot to gain from claiming that you're spiritual, even if you're not, and using that as a framework, you know, the using it as a banner, a sign, this is who I am kind of thing, rather than actually being a part of it. So, you know, you're appearing devout instead of actually living a devout life. Historical and psychological inertia. Religions, like nations, inherit centuries of politics, fear, and power structures. Even genuine believers can internalize cultural habits, nationalism, patriarchy, purity hierarchies, and mistake them for a divine truth. In short, many people use religion as a mirror to refine themselves, but as a banner to protect their identity and authority. I think that's a really powerful quote. You know, religion should be a mirror that you look in and, you know, you refine yourself, you work on yourself, you become a better, more devout person to follow your faith, you know, to be a good human, to, you know, guarantee your place in heaven. But I think, you know, recently in the world and in politics, once those things start to blend, it's no longer a mirror and it becomes a banner. It's a way to say, you know, this is what I am. And not necessarily what you practice or what you do. It's something that, like, you just identify as. And I think that's also pretty dangerous. And I think that's kind of, you know, again, not exactly what it's all about. So does religion prime you to be susceptible to poor politics, or do poor politics manipulate you through religion? I think that's a very good next step in the conversation. The short answer is it can go both ways, depending on the person, the context, and how religion is framed. Number one, religion by itself isn't the problem. At its core, religion, like philosophy or art, is a meaning system. It gives people a moral framework, a sense of belonging, hope and purpose, and a story about good and evil. Those are deeply human needs. They're not inherently political or manipulative. In fact, many religious traditions warn against greed, deceit, and tyranny. So no, religion doesn't automatically prime someone to be manipulated. But religion creates psychological conditions that can be exploited. There was a quote in The Handmaid's Tale, actually. It was of Joseph that said it. I'm gonna misquote it. But basically, it was along the lines of, he used the Christians intentionally as a tool to, you know, roll out their political agenda. And he made a comment about how they were actually overzealous and it went like way farther than he intended it to. And they just ate it up way more than he thought they ever would. And that they were too on board because of the way it can manipulate them, and they tie it to their identity and how it can be such a useful tool. But anyways, I thought that was an interesting aside that, you know, in The Handmaid's Tale, which is very much, you know, this religious society, he admits that it's not a religious society, and he used them as a tool to enact what he wanted to enact politically. And I also just thought it was funny that he said they were a little overzealous and it got carried away and they actually went way farther with it than he ever imagined. Links moral to morality to belonging. If you doubt, you risk exclusion. Like I was saying earlier, that banner instead of the mirror. It's, you know, I think the banner side of things, it's become more like, I'm a part of this group instead of, you know, I believe these things, if that makes sense. And so I think that also makes it dangerous once it becomes political, because then, you know, that banner lets all your friends know and your family know who you are, and it's your identity. And so if you start to question that, and you kind of have to, you know, tear that banner down, I think that there's a lot of, you know, personally damning things that can happen. I remember Pete Buttigieg. I read his book, and there was a part where he talked about climate change and how it actually makes more sense for someone to deny climate change if you're part of a group that doesn't believe in it than it makes sense for someone to acknowledge its existence, because if you deny it, nothing really happens to you either way in your personal life, like immediately that you can see. But if you acknowledge it and you're supposed to deny it, you know, you can lose your friends, you can lose your family, you can lose your, you know, your group that you're a part of. So you can lose a lot from not going along with something just to go along with it, even if you think that it's not necessarily right. And I think that's part of why, you know, politics and religion forming together can be so dangerous, is because you have to go along with it. It isn't really, you know, questionable. You have to just, like I said before, you know, the faith is love, faith is truth, faith is unquestioning. You just have to go along with it. You don't have a choice. And I think that that's really scary and really dangerous. So the next part, politics, on the other hand, often instrumentalizes religion. Authoritarian or opportunistic politicians quickly learn that invoking religion grants them instant moral legitimacy, unites followers through a shared fear of pride, simplifies complex issues into moral barriers. Good versus evil, like I was talking about with the immigrants, they, them, they're taking, they're evil, they're raping, they're killing, they're doing this, they're doing that, they shouldn't be here. If you see them as evil, it's easier for you to get on board than, you know, these people are human. They were, you know, coming here for a better life. They escaped this, they escaped that. The Statue of Liberty in and of itself, which is a great symbol of America, is for immigrants to see as they come here as a symbol of freedom that they've made it. You know, it was a gift to us, and that's what it's supposed to symbolize. That's what it means to me. So it's kind of a big breakage and, you know, reality, what we should stand for versus what the herd wants us to stand for and you have to go along with without putting much thought behind. There is a feedback loop, religion and politics. Once that manipulation takes hold, a feedback loop forms. Politicians use religious narratives to justify policies, and then religious leaders endorse those politicians as defenders of faith. And then followers feel their identity and salvation depend on loyalty. Doubt and dissent becomes heresy and betrayal. So, like I said, you know, multiple times through this conversation, we've gone over how, you know, you get in this like snowball effect and this feedback loop of once you're in, you can't get out. And I think that that's, you know, really honestly the danger of any cult-like structure. If you've ever, you know, learned about a cult or seen anything about a cult or, you know, read about somebody that's been in one, it's very much how it is. And I think that, you know, politically, I think it's easy to describe a certain following, a red hat group as a cult. And I think that's part of why. So what can break the cycle? Theological literacy. Actually reading sacred texts instead of relying on filtered interpretations. I think that's a big one to me. You know, if you're a self-proclaimed super religious person, go by the text itself. You know, there's nothing like I was in the military, and, you know, I come from a family that works in aviation. And I think that, you know, this is kind of a terrible metaphor to use, but I think it could work for a lot of people. In maintenance and in aviation and in the military, you're supposed to go by the book. You know, if you're going by the book, you're never wrong, because it's written for how you're supposed to act and how you're supposed to behave. So I think if you're worried about this, you know, being kicked out of your religious group or whatever, to extend the metaphor, do by the book maintenance. You know, live by that text that you're supposed to live by. And if you're going off of that and you have the words written in the book to prove it, you can't be wrong. You can't be kicked out, because you're going by the book. That's what you're supposed to do. Next, pluralism, exposure to other moral systems and perspectives. I think pluralism is a big reason why people's political opinions can shift as they go to college, as they go to the military, as they, you know, grow, learn, experience new things. A lot of times people change. I think that's why, you know, a certain party is afraid of college. I myself was always liberal, but in the military, I met a lot of people, a lot of diversity, and I think it, not that I was ever someone that really was like, you know, easily manipulated when it came to, you know, face value of like race or, you know, where somebody came from. I actually prefer minorities. I think they're interesting. I think it's more fun to be friends with somebody that's, you know, not your cookie cutter, you know, Caucasian person. But anyways, I think that really opens your mind. And I think that's, you know, a really great thing for everybody that they should experience. healthy skepticism, learning that questioning authority isn't a sin, it's discernment. I think that that's also an interesting thing because I myself am not religious, but I've always thought of, you know, questioning God and him and his power. It's kind of like if I were, you know, talking to one of my buddies and I told him that I sent this new bench press record, right? And I'm really proud of it. I worked really hard to get there and I did it. And I actually did it. I'm not making it up. And my friend was like, no, you can't bench press that much. There's no way. Like, you didn't do that. That's flattering. It's not insulting. I don't want to damn that person for not believing me because I actually did it. And it shows that he's really impressed and really, you know, he thinks it's crazy that I could do something like that, but I can't. And so I think that, you know, if there really was a God, or if there really is a God, and, you know, to question him, A, is to utilize your free will, which he gave you. But also to, I don't know why it should be so damning and why it should be so, like, I don't know, just unacceptable, I guess. Because if he can really do and really is and really has done all the things, then I don't know. I don't understand why there would be so much anger behind, you know, some healthy skepticism. Community accountability. Real faith communities emphasize compassion over conformity. I think we're also seeing that sometimes. You know, the Pope has spoke out a few times about how we should treat immigrants. The previous Pope, I believe, spoke out about LGBTQ rights. Those are very powerful things. I think that, you know, I am not religious, like I've said a few times, but my grandma was. My dad's mom was probably one of the most faith-following people I've ever met in my life. And she was also one of the most empathetic people I've ever met in my life, just so caring and so, you know, willing to just go out of her way to help other people. And I think that today's religious people or people that claim to be religious today, I'm not seeing those same, you know, characteristics in them. And I think that it's because it's a banner now. I think my grandma used it as a mirror to look at herself, to become a better person, you know, to be more devout, to follow the faith, to elevate yourself. And I don't think that's happening anymore. I don't think people are looking inward at all. I think it's a banner to, you know, just add them to a group that they want to be a part of, and then that's it. The next question, is this a reason behind separation of the two? So, you know, the separation of church and state is what I'm referring to now. Is it to protect the people from political manipulation, or is that to protect religion itself? So that's a sharp observation. Actually, it is both. So number one, to protect the people from political manipulation. When government and religion merge, political leaders can claim divine authority. I rule because it's God's will. So, you know, I had a dream. God came to me and he said this. So now you have to follow me and you can't question me or you're going to hell. Silence dissent as heresy or a sin. So, you know, if you don't agree with me, you're not agreeing with God because God spoke to me. Use fear of damnation or moral shame to enforce obedience. Like I said, you know, you disagree with me, you're going to hell. You disagree with me, you're not one of us. You disagree with me, you know, you're disagreeing with God. We can't stand with you. You're out of the group. You know, you're out of this, you're out of that, you're gone. You're dead. Funnel public power and money into religious institutions loyal to them. So, you know, it's a feedback loop. You gain some power, you input into the church, the church supports you, the church preaches about you, and then it's a feedback loop that goes on and on and on. And that's really, really dangerous, especially because there are so many things that can be to gain from that. You know, the fall of democracy is really profitable for a short time. So there's a lot to gain in wanting to see its downfall. The founders had seen that dynamic firsthand in Europe, especially under monarchies, where the king ruled as divine right. Religious language was used to justify wars, class hierarchies, and prosecution. So they wanted a government of reason and consent, not revelation and decree. That's why the First Amendment starts with, Congress shall make no law respecting an establishment of religion or prohibiting the free exercise thereof. I'm going to read that a second time. Congress shall make no law respecting an establishment of religion or prohibiting the free exercise thereof. The first half, no establishment, protects the citizen from state-enforced faith. The second half, free exercise, protects the individual from state interference and personal faith. So, to protect religion from political corruption. The founders, and many theologians since, also understood that religion gains political power, it's inevitable becomes compromised. When a faith becomes a state tool, it starts serving the agenda of power, not spiritual truth. Like I said, there's a lot of gain to manipulating this, and that gain corrupts it. It's toxic. It's a cancer on the religion itself. So really, it's to protect your religion a lot as well. It's not to you know, keep your religion from progressing. It's to keep your religion from corrupting. It loses its prophetic voice, the ability to criticize injustice. So I think a lot of, you know, religious teaching are to help you criticize injustice. And so, like I said before, you know, a lot of these things, they're kind of the exact opposite of what it's supposed to teach you. And as people start to use it as a tool for political gain, it really flips it around. And I think that's why there is so many warnings about the false prophet, because it makes you go against what it is trying to keep you from doing. So it's really having you act the exact opposite way of what it's teaching. It becomes bureaucratic, tribal, and performative rather than transformative. James Madison and Thomas Jefferson both warned about this explicitly. Jefferson's metaphor of a wall of separation wasn't anti-religion. It was about keeping religion pure, uncoerced, and voluntary. Madison said, religion and government will both exist in greater purity the less they are mixed together. So I'm going to read that one again as well. Religion and government will both exist in greater purity the less they are mixed together. So I think that is also a really good quote, because it shows that they both snowball in negative, toxic ways if you blend them together. It's not good. It's kind of like when, you know, you add water to gasoline. Have you ever, if you have a boat and you've ever gone boating and you're at the gas station, you see just like a little drop of gasoline in the water, and that like rainbow color and the like toxic gasoline look just spreads like crazy. And I think that's a kind of a good example or some imagery to show what can happen as these two things merge, just instant spreading and not in a good way. So both sides stay healthier when they're independent. Religion thrives on conscience and persuasion. Democracy thrives on reason and accountability. So in short, the separation of church and state isn't anti-religion. It's pro-freedom and pro-integrity that protects citizens from sacred tyranny and protects the sacred from political corruption. So I see a lot on Facebook, and just in general, you know, people claiming to be religious, but also going against their own beliefs. And I think that it's kind of sad, to be honest, because I think it takes, you know, a good devout follower, and it makes them act in a way that isn't how they should be, and it makes them do that because they think that it's what they need to do to be a good person of faith, when ironically and sadly, I believe it's making them the opposite, because it has become a banner as opposed to a mirror. So, you know, I think that the separation of church and state is great. I think that it's less legitimate than it should be, unfortunately, at today's day and age. But I think that it's important, and I think that, you know, you should keep religion out of politics. And I think that you shouldn't, you know, I identify as a certain party member just because they are, quote unquote, the religious party, or they're, you know, the Christian party, or they follow you these values, because I'm not religious, so this might not mean anything to somebody who is, but I think that you're much more likely to, you know, get into heaven and be someone that God looks fondly upon by loving your neighbor, by living by the values in the Bible, by being a good person, by being empathetic, by reaching out to a stranger, by helping someone in need. I think that's a lot more important than having a cross on the wall of your house and saying that you're a Christian. So I think that, you know, it's really important to take things by a case-by-case basis and actually think, what does my faith want me to do? And not blindly follow because that group is the quote-unquote faith group. I think that's really dangerous. I think that's really harmful. And I think that that's really making you go against what your religion wants you to do. So those are my thoughts. Those are the facts. Some background. Now that we're on the same page, what say you?